Blog Talk Radio.
From the studios of Teeing It Up, Swampscott, Jersey, this is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on a Thursday, September 29th, the eve of the 2016 Ryder Cup, joined by Stephen Hennessy from Golf Digest. Hello, sir.
Hey, Jeremy. How's it going?
I'm good. This has been an interesting week in the run-up to day one matches, and the reason why I wanted you on here is I suspected that this week would be interesting, and it has. We've had a lot of off-the-course things, some very weird things, and let's start with Phil and Hal Sutton. That's about the last, Hal Sutton was about the last person I expected to be making headlines this week.
Yeah, that happened, 13 years ago at Oakland Hills, with Phil and Tiger being paired together by Hal Sutton. All of a sudden, Hal Sutton is in the headlines again. I don't think he expected that, and that was obvious by the comments he made to our Dave Shidlowski and Golf Week's Alex Maselli. I think Phil realized after it all happened that he went about it a little too harshly. You know, he was making a point to kind of make it vocal that there needs to be more planning between partners. I'm sure that was discussed in task force meetings and such the last year and, you know, the last couple months, but I'm not sure that he needed to make it public like he did, and the way he did it and the delivery, and he kind of ripped Hal Sutton again. I mean, people know that it was a mistake. It was obvious it was a mistake. Westwood and Darren Clark cleaned their clock that day at Oakland Hills, and they didn't have enough preparation with the right ball, you know, the high spin ball that Tiger was playing didn't fit Phil's game. And, you know, that's all been talked about for more than 10 years. So, Hal Sutton unfortunately had to relive it this week and feel bad for him about that. And I think Phil realized it. So yeah, just odd that, you know, it's sort of the result of the Ryder Cup starting on a Friday, I think, especially on U.S. soil. So you have all this media lead up. So on Monday, you know, there's a lot of boots on the ground by media guys, and they have 4 days of stuff to fill and content to produce. So you end up having these kind of awkward storylines. So this one was filled and created by Phil himself. So Phil tends to have a directive of where he wants a conversation and interview to go, and that was the case here. But, you know, it's just these non-golf type things that tend to happen at the Ryder Cup, but it's just been a little crazier than usual, I would say, this year at Hazeltine so far.
Yeah, and for me, I think it's partly because of the task force, partly because of how important this Ryder Cup is for the U.S., and I also think it's slightly because of the week we've had. You know, the first 2 days of this week were all Arnie, basically. And in a sense, I thought it was good that the Ryder Cup starts on Friday, because I thought that these 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, would give both sides a chance to mourn and to express their thoughts and then to get back to the intense competitive nature. And Phil, I think, feels that and this is my personal thought, that this is a huge week for Phil's career and his legacy, because Phil was outspoken back in 2014 at that press conference, which was the most insane press conference I've ever seen in my life in golf. And he feels that I think that this is his baby, and that these changes over the last 2 years is what Phil is trying to do to rewrite the U.S. side of the Ryder Cup and have a system that can be successful for years going forward. And he's been very honest and very straightforward and very forthcoming with what he thought worked and didn't work. And I think that part of it is that so many people have been telling stories this week because of Arnie, and Phil decided to tell a story, you know, in the context of the task force, and he happened to reveal too much.
Yeah. You've seen this in the past with Phil, where this kind of stuff means a lot to him, and golf, you know, when he really wants something in golf, it the emotions of it get to him. We saw that this year at Baltusrol. I thought he was he came off of playing so well at Troon and looked like Baltusrol in the PGA Championship was kind of tailor-made for his next major, and I think, and he admitted it after that, he just wanted it too bad, and he let the emotions get to him, and kind of every shot that he hit poorly was, oh my God, you know, I can't believe I'm doing this to myself. Well, he's putting similar pressure on himself, I think, here at Hazeltine, where, you know, he's kind of positioning himself for the future, and a lot of what you said about last time at Glen Eagles, his press conference, kind of forcing change to happen, and that all the dominoes have been falling. So this is kind of the next step and the biggest culmination of that since Glen Eagles. So I think in his head, he's putting a lot of pressure on himself, and so far it hasn't gone well. He came out and ripped Hal Sutton, and hopefully he could kind of compartmentalize that. And when it comes to playing, I'm in the Ryder Cup. He's one of the U.S. team, you know, the best players that they have on the team. So he has to put all the emotion aside and just play golf. You know, don't make it any bigger than it is. It's not some huge world event. It's just a golf exhibition between the United States and Europe that has happened a bunch, and he's added a lot of excitement to it, certainly over the last 2 years by his comments and kind of the actions that have resulted. So it's going to be interesting to see how he plays after all this.
Yeah, seriously, and especially because the U.S. has a history, according to Davis Love III, of trying too hard, which is obviously you know, something that is not good when it comes to golf, because if you try too hard, usually that's what leads to stupid mistakes. For my money, it's interesting, Steve, that these two teams could not be more different. You've got a U.S. team that is extremely heavy on veterans, and a team for Europe that is extremely heavy on rookies. And that leads us to Danny Willett, whose brother decided that he should make some headlines this week. First of all, what was PJ thinking? And second of all, I don't get why these guys don't say to their families that for 1 week, this is like every other sport in the world, don't, you know, have material to put up on the bulletin board. It just doesn't make sense to me what the heck he was thinking.
Yeah, you know, he's trying to be funny, and to be honest, I thought some of it was pretty humorous. You know, he went over the line a little bit, but he kind of nailed Americans to a degree, you know, filled up with cookie dough and pissy beer, and that's like a classic line, but, you know, he's adding so much pressure to his brother, and his brother has been looking forward to this moment for months and months after his Masters win back in April, so kind of spoil it a little bit for him is a shame for Willett, because he's been such a great player this whole year. So obviously I don't think his brother really put that all together, that this would kind of jeopardize Danny's success in the Ryder Cup. So he was sort of trying to do a funny thing and, you know, capture some attention in the eyeballs, and that's sort of been his thing on social media. He's kind of gotten a name for himself, at least in golf, you know, media and Twitter, which is so small anyway, but he's kind of become this funny guy. So he's just trying to amplify it, because the Ryder Cup is this huge week for all of that. So, you know, I could see where his brother would do that, but just obviously didn't think it all the way through in terms of how that would affect his brother, which is a shame.
And just to tack on that, his brother hasn't played well since Augusta. He's got one top 10 since the Masters.
Right.
It's not like
yeah.
He's had this great year with five wins. He's really struggled. And, you know, that first tee experience tomorrow for him won't be pleasant. And then to add on that pressure, and of course the U.S. fans will heckle. They've been already heckling him in the days since those comments. It just was not smart for me. and for my
You know, for Willett, he had a lot of distractions after the Masters, obviously a lot of attention, and with his wife having a baby after that, I think that's where a lot of his you know, mind was, and he had different priorities than playing good golf. He had already achieved the pinnacle of his career, so. But certainly, first tee is going to be interesting, and if he gets off to a poor start on Friday, if he plays Friday or even Saturday, then could be in for a long week.
And then the last off-the-course thing we have to get to is Davis Love saying this is the best U.S. team ever on paper, which he claims, I guess, was slightly taken out of context in that the question he was asked was what he would tell the guys in the team room. But I'm not sure why Davis said that in the first place in public. Say that, you know, once the event is over, if you win. Why say that now? That made no sense to me.
No, I agree. Just, you know, the potential to add some extra pressure to the team, which isn't what you need when you've lost, you know, so many Ryder Cups over the last 20 years to Team Europe. And, God, I don't know if I agree with him. I mean, there's certainly great, there's some great players on the U.S. side overall. And when you look at the European side and their lack of experience with six rookies, you know, with some unproven guys and guys that haven't been playing well on the Europe side, Andy Sullivan hasn't done really anything this year, and so on. Certainly, you know, there's reason for DL3 to be confident in the U.S., but to call this team possibly maybe the best team ever, it's just a, you know, disservice to other teams. If you look at the 1981 U.S. Ryder Cup team, the Golf Channel put this graphic up earlier this week. That team was certainly better top to bottom than this team. I'll read you just the top players from that team. Jack Nicklaus at 41, Tom Watson, Ben Crenshaw, Johnny Miller, Hale Irwin, Tom Kite, Lee Trevino. I mean, these are legends of the game. I think there's six or seven Hall of Famers on that team. And you look at this team, yeah, certainly you have Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, some of the best players in the world, but when you look at the top six or seven from that team in 81 and compare it to the 2016 team, you know, you're looking at, oh, well, would you rather have Matt Kuchar or Lee Trevino? Well, Lee Trevino has multiple majors and an esteemed career. Matt Kuchar has had a very consistent, excellent career, but just that comparison for DL3 to make was untimely, I thought, and didn't see the reason behind it.
Yeah, talking to Steve Hennessy here about the Ryder Cup, and also that's an insult to some guy named Tiger Woods.
Yeah, well, that's true too. Yeah, at least he's involved in some capacity.
Yeah. All right, so you know, I want the folks out there to tune in tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, because first tee at the Ryder Cup is unbelievable. And Tommy Roy has been smart enough to install cable cam, which is flying from, I guess it's the practice range or the practice putting green, all the way to the first tee. And the seats that they have put in there and the amount of people that can fit around that first tee is just absolutely unbelievable. I mean, those people setting up this golf course from a fan perspective seem to have done a great job. So both of us both play. What club would you hit off the first tee to make you feel comfortable? Because that has got to be the most stressful atmosphere, you know, you can ever walk into in golf, I would think.
Oh, for sure. And people have said that have been at the highest echelons of the game. I just read a good Arnold Palmer tip recently that he had produced for Golf Digest, and he said whenever he had a pressure shot, he just focused on his fundamentals. So he said grip, stance, backswing, and through swing. So, you know, that's what you have to focus on. I would rip driver because that's my best club, and, you know, screw it. You got to put on, it's a show, really. This is for entertainment. And, yeah, why not rip driver and see what happens?
All right. So by the time this airs, on some mediums, the opening morning pairings will have already come out. So let's preview it this way. If you look at the four U.S. practice pods, which could be an indication in some respects of where the pairings are going, who are you most excited and concerned about from each pod? The first pod is Spieth, Patrick Reed, Kuchar, and Dustin Johnson. For me, I'm most concerned about Kuchar and most excited about Patrick Reed just because he loves this format.
Those four, that's a very stout four. I wouldn't be worried about Kuchar. He's so consistent. He's a really good four zones player. Not going to light up a course, so in four ball, he's not going to be as intimidating and probably not going to win that many holes, but he's going to keep you in holes, which makes him a good foursomes player. If it wasn't for Sunday at the Tour Championship, Dustin Johnson would be talked about way more coming into this, but, you know, Rory had that great final round and won in the playoffs, so we're kind of forgetting how well Dustin has played all year, so he might be the best player in this whole thing. Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth, too, certainly capable. I think they're both looking to peak. Again, obviously, the majors were their peaks this year, but, again, looking to put together another great weekend. So that's a stout U.S. Couple of players right there.
The next practice pod is Brandt Snedeker, Ryan Moore, Brooks Koepka, J.B. Holmes. You know, for Ryan Moore, he just got into this event, so you got to wonder where his nerves will be. And for me, I just love Brandt Snedeker. This is an aggressive format match plays. He's an aggressive putter. He's a sneaky, fiery guy. I really love Brandt Snedeker in that foursome.
Yeah, he has to play a little better than his recent form, but, you know, there's certainly a few better putters when they have it going on. And Brandt Snedeker, Ryan Moore is intriguing to see how he does this week. He's kind of been considered for pretty much every U.S. Ryder Cup team on the outside, not a likely choice, but he's been in the conversation the last 6 or 8 years, and has proven he's a great match play player with his stout U.S. amateur run in 04, and he was one of the best amateurs really in history when you look at his run that year. So, yeah, that's an intriguing group, and I think Snedeker and Zach Johnson would be a consistent group. I'm not scared of them when they walk to the tee. You know, if they're facing like Martin Keimer and, I don't know, anybody, you know, Chris Wood, Chris Wood and Keimer are, I think, more capable of lining up a course. So Snedeker and Zach Johnson are consistent, and they're going to keep you in every hole, but, not the strongest group, I would think, for the U.S.
And then looking at the last practice group, which is Phil, Zach, Ricky, and Jimmy Walker, you look at Phil and Zach, which have been a potent pairing, especially in the President's Cup, and then Ricky and Jimmy. You know, Ricky was so happy to make that team because he thought he could pair right back up with his partner. For me, I think that this is a big week for Ricky Fowler. He's had a really disappointing 2016, and this is a great way to save it.
Yeah, he's kind of hit the ball very well all year, and that's been the word on his game. So his putter has been off, which has been his strong suit early part in his career. So, if he gets a hot putter this week, he could be pretty stout, and he might be a good foursomes player. I would like to see him and Phil teed up together. That'd be a fun group. A couple people have been calling for that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Walker, too. He's so consistent and kind of coming in under the radar after his PGA win. Hasn't got that much buzz just because he's not, a marquee name, so I don't think people are likely to talk about him, but he's someone who's a great addition to the U.S. team.
And for my money, too, Phil and Ricky have those Tuesday practice games together, which I and which I think is a big deal because film makes mm-hmm. those exciting and makes those stressful. For the Europeans, it's really interesting because you look at, you know, guys like Chris Wood and Matthew Fitzpatrick, and there's some guys that just are not in this spot ever before. Guys like Rafa Cabrera-Bello, who I just don't know what to expect out of them. And do you put the rookies together and maybe make them a sacrificial lamb temporarily just to get them out there and get them experience? Or do you try to pair them with a veteran, much like Paul McGinley did back in 2014 with Graham McDowell plus Victor Dubuisson, which turned out to be a very nifty move by Paul McGinley to get Victor in there on a nice even footing.
Yeah, we saw that with Dubuisson. He came in and really contributed to the European cause playing with McDowell, a wily veteran. And then Nicholas Kolsaerts at Medina had no experience but came in and he was great. I think it was in four balls. He was excellent because of his strength and ability to light up a course. So, but among these rookies on the Europe side, certainly Danny Willett would have been feared coming into this week, but all these distractions and now not playing very well coming into it, you know, you don't know what to expect from him. But Andy Sullivan and Chris Wood. Chris Wood has been hurt for most of the latter part of the season, so he's kind of a question mark, as is Andy Sullivan, who has been playing well. Coming into it, he sort of qualified because he played really well at the end of 2015 and the start of 2016, so he doesn't really scare you. Cabrera-Bello, I think, is a really solid, stout player who kind of has a complete game. He doesn't wow you with anything, but he hits it pretty far. He's a really good wedge player, good irons, and he made a lot of putts at the World Golf Play Match Play event in Austin, and he got decently far in that, so he's no pushover. I think it's going to come down to can that middle group of the Europeans contribute? And it'll be interesting to see who Darren Clark pairs guys like Lee Westwood, Martin Keimer, and these guys. You know, how are they going to contribute? Because Lee Westwood has so much experience in this format. His putter and scrambling is pretty weak, but his approach game is still one of the best in the world. He ranked 7th on the PGA Tour this year. Strokes gained approaches. And then you have the upper echelon of the European team, Sergio, Rory, Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson. You're talking about four of the best ball strikers in the world. So I think if I was Darren Clark, I would pair like a Rory with one of those rookies who you're kind of unsure about, because Rory could kind of just bring him along, and you know, as Rory lights up a course, you know, this guy won't get in his way. So, you know, it's interesting because you're right. Darren Clark could make a group, you know, a sacrificial group and just kind of throw him out and see what happens. I don't think that's going to result in much unless they have a lot of confidence in themselves. So it's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be the blowout that people are expecting because how solid that top of the European team is and what they could do on the whole weekend.
And also, the Ryder Cup never, you know, it never really is a large margin of victory event. You know, we've seen it at sometimes, especially when poor decisions were made. But if you go back through recent history, it hasn't been that, you know, large of a gap, which is why I think so many people were skeptical about the task force, because they viewed the task force as, you know, something to fix a problem that may not have been there. And I think in some people's eyes, these have been close all the way. So I don't think it'll be that margin either. Who's your most important guy for the U.S. and your most important guy for the European team?
I think the most important guy is Phil Mickelson. We touched on it, but he's the leader of this team. That, you know, I don't know how much that really matters in a match play format like this. It's really performing on your own golf kind of like Phil Mickelson in that he's this experienced guy. Lee West is playing in like his 8th or 9th Ryder Cup. Hasn't been playing that well lately. He's played very well in majors this year, but Augusta was a long time ago and he had a great finish there, and U.S. Open he kind of faltered down the stretch. So if he could, if his game is on, he could be a difference maker, I think, because those would be points that you'd expect the U.S. to take in a match with like Lee Westwood and one of the rookie guys. But if Lee Westwood can kind of rise to the occasion, recapture that magic that he's shown in past Ryder Cups, he could be a deciding factor.
For me, and it's actually somebody way different, Jordan Spieth. Jordan, yeah. I think, is the trendsetter. I think guys like he, Zach, and Phil, if they get off the good starts, it'll just be a nice trickle-on effect for everybody else. Number two for the U.S. is Tiger. He has to successfully deliver turkey sandwiches. It's going to be huge, you know? If he fumbles the sandwich, it's going to have huge impacts on the whole team, don't you think?
It's a game changer. Yeah. Absolutely. He's got to deliver.
And then finally for the European team, it's Sergio. He's the heart and soul, I believe, of the Ryder Cup for the Europeans in the post-Seve era. And I firmly believe that if Sergio plays well, makes the putts, and doesn't complain, that this will be okay for the Europeans. And I think that he can have a real calming effect on a lot of guys. That's my, you know, sense of Sergio.
Yeah, I like that. Sergio always rises to the occasion at the Ryder Cup, and I'd expect him to play very well this week, as he usually does.
Who's your champion?
I think the U.S. by... Yeah, it's tough to say. I'll say by 2 points or like a point and a half. What about you? Who do you think?
I forgot what I said the other day. It was the U.S., I think, like 15-13 or 15 or like 15.5, 12.5, something like that. You know, some kind of margin like that. I just don't think this is a large margin victory. And I also think that we are at a real danger point in 2016 in golf, where another gimme gate, another rules fiasco could have a real downing effect on this, and I just hope that somehow we can successfully avoid all kinds of rules infractions this week, because if that doesn't happen, it would really be a damn shame.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's not what golf needs, and I think there's a lot of eyeballs on this event, more so than past years. I think, you know, the average fan, the casual fan will be, you know, they always kind of are into it and they'll tune in, but I think more so than usual, there's going to be more attention beforehand, before this event. So you're right, it would be a huge shame and rob the event of its potential if there's some sort of silly rules thing that we've seen so often in 2016.
Final question, it has nothing to do with golf. I was lucky enough to meet Bruce Springsteen yesterday. Who's the...
That's right.
Yeah, who's the most famous person you've gotten to meet?
Oh, wow. Most famous person I've gotten to meet. That put me on the spot. I like it. Let me think. I got to meet Denzel Washington in college. Yeah, his son played for... I'm pretty sure it was Indiana basketball when Penn State was playing Indiana, and he was in the crowd, and I just sort of went up to him because I'm a big Denzel guy. Who else? Most famous person I've gotten to meet. Like Derek Jeter is up there. Trying to think outside of sports, though.
Right. It can also be the most, like, interesting, not so famous, but like really interesting. Like, you know, for example, I think a lot of people would be fascinated to meet Bones.
Right.
Purely not because of what Bones has meant for Phil Mickelson and for golf fans at large.
Mm-hmm. I guess I would go with Steph Curry, getting to hang out with him a little bit the way that I have and have been fortunate enough to. We did